Hello, it's only Sylv. Just a quick heads up before we get into it. We've recorded all these conversations remotely during lockdown, so there might be a few little glitches in the sound here and there. Anyway, I'll shut up now and let you crack on with listening to our chat. Hope you enjoy it, gang.
Welcome to the BIY Podcast, a podcast focused on demystifying the world of work and the music industry by sharing career stories from those who know. I'm Anne Frankenstein. I'm a DJ and broadcaster.
And I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of BIY People and Talent. And we're bringing you honest, meaningful, compassionate human conversations with people for people through the lens of working in the music business and beyond.
We are thrilled to have Olivia Hobbs, founder and director of Black Star London, join us on the show today. Sylv, can you tell us a little bit about why you invited Olivia in for a chat and how you two know each other?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you know, I wanted to talk to brilliant people that I've met over the years to share their career stories and find out how they got to where they are today, delivering insight, advice and a sprinkling of inspiration for our listeners, whether they're just starting out or they're already on their career path within the music business. So I was first aware of Olivia in the early 2010s when she was working in the digital marketing team at Polydor. She went on to work as senior marketing manager at Fiction Records, and in 2018, she set up her own creative marketing and digital consultancy called Black Star London. At the start of her career, she also worked in live, production and artist management, so she's got a brilliant breadth of knowledge and experience. I don't think I properly got to know Olivia until I think a group of us were on a U-Talks panel together up in Manchester somewhere, and we were meant to be travelling back down the same day, but there was some mad freak weather which nearly ripped the roof off Piccadilly Station and basically got stranded in Manchester for the night, which turned out rather well actually, because we all holed up in a hotel to stay overnight until we could go back to London the next morning. And we had dinner together, and I think that Olivia and I were sat opposite each other. So we got chatting, knowing us, we were probably putting the world to rights, which turned out to be the start of a great working relationship and a friendship. So I am absolutely chuffed to bits that she's agreed to have a chat with us today. Welcome to the BIY pod, Olivia.
Thanks for having me. What an incredible intro. And I remember being stranded in Manchester as well, because we had a really good steak. That's the main thing that I remember.
We did.
We had an amazing steak.
Delicious steak. And quite.
I mean,
nice
and the
steak.
Friendship was nice too. Don't yeah, like, the conversation was fine, but the steak was pretty good.
Not how gonna lie. Rude. The conversation was fine.
Never underestimate the networking power of a good steak and a night out and a fancy hotel. All important components. Olivia, it's so, so nice to have you on the pod, and we will get into your career story very shortly. But first, we like to warm our guests up with a few quick-fire questions. So think fast, don't try to be cool. First up, what is the first album you bought?
Oh God, the first one I bought, I'm not entirely sure, but the first one I was gifted was Bleach by Nirvana by my sister's dad. And I'm very grateful for that start.
Very cool. What was the first gig you went to?
The first big gig I went to was to see Stereophonics at the Birmingham Arena.
And fast forward, what was the last show you went to before lockdown?
Oh, so sad. The last show I went to, there were two actually, which I think are both worth mentioning. I went to see an incredible act that we work with called Far, and they played at the Lexington. And then also a band that I manage actually called Scalping, who were playing at the Island in Bristol. So it was a great way to go out for live gigs, I've got to say.
What's on repeat on your stereo at the moment?
You know what? I wish I could be cooler, but it's Midnight Sky by Miley Cyrus.
Nothing wrong with a bit of Miley. Who is the artist? It might be Miley Cyrus too, actually. Who's the artist who changed your life?
Ooh, it's really tough, actually. But the one who pops into my head at the moment is going to be Skin from Skunk Anansie. I remember getting Stoosh in the late 90s. And I just was completely enamoured by her. I completely fell in love. And she's just released a book called It Takes Blood and Guts, which I'm really, 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 really excited to read.
Perhaps Skin would feature then in your dream lineup. What would your dream lineup be for either a supergroup or a festival that you're curating?
Oh, God. I think for a supergroup, I'd have to have Mike Patton of Faith No More as the vocalist, but then also with Skin. So that would be a really good combo. I would also put in a side of Miley Cyrus just to make it super awesome. I'd add in some of The Weeknd as well. I don't know what they'd all play in this supergroup, though. It'd be a pretty one-sided supergroup, got to say.
It's all right, mate. It's your dream. It's your dream line.
This is my theoretical group.
It doesn't matter if it makes any sense.
Well, this one definitely doesn't make any sense. I'd have The Weeknd, Miley Cyrus, Skin from Skunk Anansie, Mike Patton, and God, Marilyn Manson. Why not? You've got to have that makeup in there as well. Really, really spice it up. And Stevie Nicks. Adore a bit of Stevie Nicks. Yeah, like I could go on for ages and it would just be a really horrible sounding group, to be honest with you. Love There's it. Too many heroes.
Too many heroes. I tell you what, before we get stuck into your career story, when you very kindly agreed to be on the show, I sent you a list of words to pick from, your peas in the pod, if you will. And I said, pick three. And you, typical you, you said, can I have four? So I said, yeah, all right, I have four. Tell us what your words were and what made you pick them.
Yes, so I chose four words, because if you don't ask, you don't get. And I chose positivity, passion, patience, and people.
Tell us what it was specifically about those words that you were drawn to.
I think it's very easy to lean onto negative sides of the kind of job that we do. I think that, yes, it can be very tiring, it can be very busy, and people can be emotional. But I think that positivity is something that's incredibly important to keep you on track and keep the projects that you work on track. And it's something that I definitely focus on trying to keep in myself.
I think we are, and I'm sure we'll touch on this later in the podcast, but obviously the pair of us both run our own businesses. And I think you're obviously really invested on so many levels. And sometimes maybe when the small stuff isn't going quite right, it's really easy to slip out of that positive mindset. So I think it's so important. I'm so pleased you picked that word. And it is kind of like a bit of a daily.
It's a test. It's every day. I mean, I have personally, another friend of mine suggested doing a gratitude journal. And for anyone who knows me listening to this would obviously think that that'd be the sort of thing I'd throw in the bin. And initially I was like, oh, this is really lame. I'm not doing that. Ugh. And then I actually started doing it a couple of weeks ago. And it has been one of the most incredible transformative things I've done in the last few weeks, at least. Even if it's something really silly, like I'm just reminding myself that my cat was hilarious today. Or like, I'm grateful that there's food in the fridge. I'm grateful that there's water in the tap. Stuff like that, I think, is really important to remember as well, is that we're not the centre of the universe here. There's so much more going on around us. And we've got a great deal to be grateful for.
I would completely agree with that, actually. And funny enough, I don't know whether it's just 2020 in general, but that gratitude element has been really key for me as well. And and every night before I go to bed, I list out all the things I'm grateful for. And funny enough that you saying about your cat, my cat was really funny today. Like I literally say to my dog every day, I am so lucky to have you. You are hilarious. He literally keeps me going. So I think that gratitude is really key, and it's easy to forget, isn't it?
It's very easy to forget how lucky we are. That's the thing. And I think especially with the news cycle we're in for 2020, everything else that's going on around the world. And, you know, we're in the middle of a climate emergency as well. And I could go on endlessly. We are the incredibly lucky people. We just have to remind ourselves of that. And yeah, I do the same thing before bed. A couple of things down. And I think it's been, it's a really powerful thing. And I'd wish I'd done it sooner and not dismissed it.
Well, look, the next thing then is passion. Talk us through why passion was a word that you picked out.
I've picked up passion because, and it's kind of related to positivity in the sense that if you are not passionate about working in music and the sorts of things that you're doing within it, then it's going to be a slog. You know, it's not an easy industry to be a part of at all, especially not at the moment with everything that's going on around the world. Passion is the one thing that ties it all together. It's essential. Passion is the thing that makes you finish your projects on time. Passion is the thing that makes you turn up in the morning in a very hard environment. So yeah, it's essential.
Yeah, we had another guest pick passion actually, and they were like, you know, the passion is the thing that keeps you going when it's hard. So I would wholeheartedly agree with that. And patience as well. Talk us through that one.
Patience is important for me because I think especially when you've got a team around you, I think that people can expect someone will just do something or get something immediately. And no one is going to get something that you want or do something that you want immediately. When you're working with a brand new team of people, which we do because we're an agency and we onboard different clients every other week. And that's why that part is so, so, so important, because if we were not patient and we were not respectful, then nothing would ever get past the first few weeks. We have to learn from each other because it resets every few weeks. It makes you very, very focused on that particular element of your four P's.
Absolutely. And people, the last one, talk us through that.
Well, people are everything. That's the thing, is that we don't sell furniture. We don't sell glasses. We don't sell plates. We sell people. People are probably the most important thing in that list. But also everything we do is, it's down to the opinion of people. It's down to the advocacy of people. It's down to the skills of people. And it's down to the passions of people.
Funnily enough, and one of the reasons, apart from the fantastic friendship and fun we've had, one thing that I feel incredibly lucky, and in fact, bringing it back to gratitude, I'm very, very grateful for, is that when you started your business and you continue to be a client of mine, and that's fabulous, and bringing it back to that people point, gosh, so many P's. I absolutely love working with you. I love working with Blackstar because it's an absolute joy for me. You always trust me and Soph, the fabulous Soph, who I haven't mentioned yet on the podcast, who works with me at BIY. You trust us implicitly when you give us a job to work on. You're like, who are your best candidates for this? And honestly, you don't know how much it means to us that you always give time to the candidates that we send over, and you always give us detailed feedback. And whether a candidate gets the job or not, there's always something we're able to go back to people with, hopefully to help them kind of build for the future. And, you know, next time they're in an interview, they'll be able to use that feedback. And I think a lot of your team, or a number of your team, we've been on that journey together because we've introduced you to
you
to
have
those people.
You brought in the majority of our team have come through recruiting with you guys. And again, it's both sides. It's because I know that you get what we're trying to do. I know the people that you send us are going to be the right kind of people, and we just need to chat to them. And it actually makes it quite difficult, to be honest with you, because we end up like, who do we take on? We could have everyone. I think there was a call out that we did a couple of months ago where we were like, we could hire every single person you've sent to us. How dare you?
How dare you? And
how
know
very
what?
Dare you?
Give credit where credit's due. I know that certainly for a couple of those jobs recently, it's been Soph's hard work. It's really heartwarming for us that you invest so much time in that process, and you really give everyone a chance. So that's thank you on our behalf to you for everything that you do.
Well, thank you for sending fantastic people and making an awesome team.
Oh, there you go. Well, look, before, and thank you to the people as well, because they're the ones, the candidates, they're the ones that are your brilliant team. And before we get into a total love-in, I think I'd better hand over to Anne for some career story questions.
Break it up, you two. Go get a steak somewhere.
Yeah, well, maybe we will, Anne.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I meant that. When this is all over. Well, let's get stuck into your career story then. I want to go way back to the beginning. And obviously, you were a music fan. But when did you realise, A, that you could work in music, and B, that a music business actually existed?
I think I got into music very, very, very early, because I had an older sister who was very engaged with music. So it meant that I was getting albums, I was getting tapes and stuff from a really, really, really young age. So I had a bit of a jump on all of my peers, I guess you could say, at school and that sort of thing. And for me, it was more about, I had this fantasy of I wanted to make records. So I wanted to be a producer. And then I learned a bit about that and what that meant, really got into instruments, learning different things like guitar, bass and drums, but never really with the intention of being in the front of a band, always very much with the idea of just understanding it to be in the back. And then it wasn't until, I remember, we went on holiday somewhere like Caravan Park or something. And we met someone there who worked in music at some capacity. And I can't remember even who the guy was, but it was when I was about 8 or 9 years old. That's when I realised that it could be a career, that it was something that people actually did and you got paid money for, which has always been of great interest. And yeah, and then from there, just sort of tried to find courses that were related. At the time, there weren't many courses in music technology. I think I was in the first or second intake year of the course happening at the college that I went to. They didn't have a lot of equipment for that sort of stuff at the school I was at either, so I couldn't do a lot of learning within the school environment. So I had to do it all very independently and build up from there, really. But yeah, I think what triggered it off, truthfully, is meeting some bloke in the caravan park on holiday who was like, oh yeah, I do this for a living, mate.
So interesting that you should say that, actually, because a lot of the people that we speak to are like, I just didn't know. I didn't know it existed. I think to have bumped into someone on your holidays at a caravan park is actually, it's so fortunate, isn't it? But then all credit to you for sort of following that up and focusing that that's where you wanted to go. I'm not suspecting that 8-year-old Olivia dedicated her life from that point forward to building a career in the industry.
Oh, God, no. She dedicated her life to being massively obsessed with people like Gwen Stefani and Skin. I think I basically just dressed like Tragic Kingdom Gwen Stefani as long as I could until it became like, you know, you've really got to stop that now, Olivia. You look like a weirdo.
So how did you actually start making tracks, getting into the music business? How did you start working in the industry?
All right. So I basically managed to make headway by I found a recording studio that was really close to me because I had this idea that I wanted to do production and do recording. And it just happened to be up the road. And I thought, fantastic. So I went in there and try to basically be like, oi mate, give me a job. And weirdly, that approach doesn't really work. So instead, the approach that I took was to sit in that studio every weekend and not leave for a while. And then eventually, when I got to know the people there, I was like, can I just have a job on the reception? Can I make tea? I'll clean. I'll do anything. And in the end, they were like, you can clean. And I was like, wicked. You can pay me minimum wage for 2 hours on a Saturday. And I'm going to come in here and I'm going to sit in the studio and I'm going to clean stuff. And it justifies me being here. But you know what? It worked. And then, like, obviously, was there for a while and learned loads and got to sit in on a bunch of amazing studio sessions and learn from some incredible people. Yeah, I feel really privileged that they allowed me to come in and be a little moron in the studio and pretend I was making tea and stuff like that when I was actually just smoking roll-ups in the back.
You know what they like. You make light of it. But really, and it's another P that's on the list, but that's all proactivity, what you did there. You know, I'm always telling people about creating opportunities. You created an opportunity for yourself there because you essentially put yourself in a place where you knew music was happening around you. And therefore, you know, you put yourself in a position where you created an opportunity for yourself, which I think actually that just shows really great proactivity.
You know what? It was good and it was really, it was exciting to be a part of, and it meant that I got to know more people who were performing in bands because it was predominantly a rehearsal room as well. And then that led me on to booking my own shows at the local pub. From that point, I went into college. I didn't do very well in my GCSEs because I spent quite a lot of my time, as I said, like messing about, smoking roll-ups down the back of recording studios. So I couldn't do A-levels, unfortunately, but I was able to do a BTEC. I did a BTEC in music technology. And I did a top-up City and Guilds in adult numeracy as well, which I'm still extremely poor at, but I wish I'd spent more time doing maths, got to be honest. And then at that point, that was when I started to take it a lot more seriously, to be honest with you. And I had a tutor at the new college in Bromsgrove called Angie. And I remember one day her turning around just being like, if you don't pull your finger out, you're going to be stuck here forever. Like, you're never going to leave this town. You're not going to get onto the bits that you wanted to do. And that actually, oh, it scared the shit out of me. People had been saying it for years, parents, siblings, other teachers, and it just never quite got through. And at the point where she said it in the way that she delivered it, it absolutely cut through and it completely worked. And then it was at that point that I realised that I had to really, really, really focus, particularly on academic achievement, because it was something that I'd never really bought into. I was always quite rebellious at school and didn't really want to take part in a lot of stuff. And it made me take part. And then at that point, that's when I went and decided to go to university, which was a bit of a strange thing for me to do, I'd say, because not many other people in my family have done that, not gone down a very academic route. We're a very trades family. So yeah, managed to get into university, which was really lucky. But then I finished with a first class degree, which I'm really proud of, because I had no GCSEs, basically, City and Guilds in maths, and then I got a first class degree. So you can turn it around. No one's a lost cause.
I think that's a really valid point as well. And your turning point of paying attention and taking things seriously happened a lot earlier than other people I know, myself included. And I think it is a really important point to make. It is never too late, I think, to turn it round and to actually get your head down and crack on. People kind of identify what they want to do and start their careers at different times in their life or change careers later on, or people have different circumstances. So I think that's a really interesting point. And again, it's really important people realise that it doesn't matter how far they've gone down another road when they want to stop and turn it round and try something different. You know, you need to put the legwork in, but you can get there. It is possible.
And also just be prepared to look really, really stupid. Because sometimes stuff won't work. Things will backfire. But if you don't try, you don't know.
That's such a valid point. Never be afraid to look stupid is a really important thing, because the stupid thing is not doing the thing that you really want to do because you're scared. And I think a number of us, you'll notice I use the term us, are crippled by fear on a daily basis. And some days it's just about going, if I'm afraid, I'm never going to do it. I can still be afraid, but I can have a go. I think that's an important thing to remember.
Yeah, I think we is probably the best way to put it. Like, I suffer with anxiety and depression and various other things as well that do affect that drive. But I think the best way to describe it is to, I kind of run into everything screaming, because it's kind of, you've got no choice. So you kind of have to be like, ah, and just do it. And the thing is I care deeply what people think of me. I'm not going to pretend that I don't give a shit. I absolutely do give a shit. Anyone who says that is definitely lying. 13-year-old Olivia would have said that. But no, I do. I deeply care what people think sometimes, but I care far too much. And I'm very aware that what people think probably doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that it doesn't affect me, but it means that I have to really, really take that apart and do a lot of work on myself to go, right, they're not really looking at you, they're looking at themselves. No one cares if you fail. Maybe they do, but do I care if they care?
I was going to say that there's obviously an entrepreneurial spirit, you know, that sort of served you right from the very beginning when you were looking for work in the music business, which is carried right through to what you do now. So can you talk to us a bit about what it is you do now and give us a sort of potted chronology of how you got there?
Yeah, so what is important to know is that both of my parents are self-employed and run their own businesses too in the building trade. And my mum used to do, she was a balloon decorator. A balloon artiste. She used to make sculptures out of balloons, basically, which was quite fun. And my dad used to make rocking horses, doll's houses, children's toys and all that sort of stuff. And then just kitchens and bathrooms and all that sort of thing. But what's been really important and the reason that I think I've learned resilience is because they've done so many different types and styles of business. So they've changed that according to the market that they've been in. But also their work ethic is insane. They work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're the kind of people that if you were to call up my dad and say, the toilet's not flushing, he'd drive down at 3 a.m. from Birmingham to here, London. So that sort of thing, I don't think you can teach someone backwards. So I'm very grateful to them for that drive. And I think that that's a really important ethic to have. And it's the same one that my mum has too. So I graduated from my course, but while doing it, I had already started working at a concert promoter based up in Nottingham. And with that, I was going and doing shows at sports arenas and a couple of things in like the O2, Wembley, that sort of thing as well. So I got really, really lucky there. And a lot of it was down to just being in the right place at the right time. I managed to get a work experience placement through a friend of a friend in this promoter, just kind of like for a few weeks doing a bit of photocopying stuff. And they didn't realize that I had the degree and the experience in audio to the level that I had. So when it started to come to show season, I was spotting things in the riders and in the requests that probably hadn't been raised properly. And then they recognized and they were really kind and they were like, actually, do you want to do this a bit more with us? Do you want to come on board? So I ended up in a position where I was in the final year of university, sort of waiting to go back to this job, really. And that was a really lucky place to be. And it meant that I could really just focus on study and not stress out too much, I think, on what was coming next. And then when I moved into that job more, I was really lucky to go touring with people like I did some dates with the Pussycat Dolls. I did dates with Westlife. I did dates with Boyzone. I got to go and do a big show with Santana at Silverstone Racecourse, which was a huge deal for me because, my God, it's Santana. And then what I really started to notice through that and through being in that live production world, and the reason I went into live production predominantly is because it is really, really prominent in the Midlands. A huge amount of the warehouses and touring companies are actually based out of the Midlands, not London. I think that when you're on the road permanently as well, being based in the centre of the country is actually a strength. And when that touring industry does recover, I'm pretty sure that it will go back to that sort of setup. So I went back in to do that job. It was really exciting. But I started to feel like I was on the wrong side personally. So even though I'd gotten there and I was doing those shows and you've got those names attached to it, I didn't feel like I was in the right place and it didn't quite ring true for me at all. So I was doing this job. I felt really lucky to have it. And one of the things that I'd really, really wanted to do over time was, as much as I loved production, I loved recording studios, again, I didn't feel like I was in the right place. So I wanted to come to London and give it a go. And I think that it's because when you grow up outside of London, it becomes a bit of a fantasy city and a target place. And my dad and my brother and sister and their children are all Londoners from a previous marriage. So I'd always had that contact through the family there, even though we were in Birmingham predominantly. I decided to kind of chance it. So I left the promoter I was at and I ended up going and working in a broadband call centre and made a bit of money through bonuses and all that sort of stuff for a few weeks. I think I did about 6 weeks there and just like fully racked it all in and used that money to put down a 3 months rent on a flat in London so that I could try and get this job. And my number one target at the time was I wanted to get a job at Universal, and that's what I was going to do. To do that, I was scouring all these job sites, didn't know anyone there. I didn't know anyone at all on the recording side, really. The only people that I knew were the people I'd worked with doing the live stuff. And it's a completely different section of the industry. It doesn't really cross over. And even then, I was in no position to be asking favours because I'd done it for such a brief period of time. So I got a few opportunities to come in and do an internship interview at Universal. And I think I did so many of them because I was just so woefully unprepared every single time I went in and just begging people to basically give me a job. And then I got really lucky at one point where I came in to do an internship interview at Polydor. And the guys who interviewed me there, we just got on really well and it just clicked. And I think that what I learned from that in particular, which is pertinent for careers, is that it's not always meant to be. Just because you don't get a job somewhere, it doesn't mean you're not good enough, or it doesn't mean they don't like you. Sometimes it is more about a personal connection and that click. And that person who hired me is still my friend to this day, and we still work together through the agency. I think it's about not taking it extremely personally when you don't land something the first time, and just understanding that there are many more factors involved in the hiring process, and it's not always about you.
I would agree with that. And it is tough to see sometimes when you know you've got a really great candidate and they might do 2, 3, 4 interviews and they don't get any of those jobs. And you do try and tell them to hang in there because it's not what they've done wrong. There might just be another candidate who just had that one extra thing, and over time it will happen. And I try to get people to remember that interviews often are about connection and trust. The connection is that like natural communication that you have with that person. And ultimately, you work long hours, they're going to need to feel connected to you in whatever way that kind of manifests itself. And then the trust element is the interview process, if you like. And it's the kind of knowing that they can leave something with you. And you might not know how to do it, but you know the right questions to ask to learn how to do it. I would wholeheartedly back you up on that one, Olivia, just about the staying positive when even if it doesn't feel like it's all kind of coming together quite as quickly as you would like.
Yes, it is extremely personal getting given a job or not getting given a job. It kind of inherently isn't as well. Like the amount of times, I'm sure Sylvia's bored to death of me doing this, but when you send through candidates and they're all amazing, it's really hard to say no. It's extremely hard. And then look, when the difference between hiring one person over another is really quite minute, how do you tell someone that without absolutely breaking their heart? Like, you were good enough, but we went with this person because of something we can't really, you know, summarize for you. I think it's really, really tough. I think it's worth remembering it's not that personal.
The other thing I would say as well, though, to remember for anyone who does get turned down but does a great job at interview, is people will recommend you for other jobs. So just because you go in an interview for a job and you don't necessarily get that specific job, remember that the people interviewing you know other people. They'll have other opportunities. The person who, you know, if you're going through someone like BIY, we will have got that really amazing feedback. So it's all these little extra pieces of the jigsaw that are fitting together to get you your opportunity.
Sit and don't lose hope. Like the amount of times I walked out of interviews there when I was trying to get into that company, and I'd sit on the curb outside the label in Kensington and just cry. There was one time when I sat and I ended up smoking loads of cigarettes, and I'd given up for like 7 months at that point. And I was like, that's it, I'm having a cigarette. Sitting on the doorstep, that probably did me a load of good, didn't it? Sitting outside Universal crying and chain smoking. but the point is that it's worth just keep going back, keep bouncing back to it, and try your best to not take it extremely personally. Otherwise, you'll never, ever get anywhere.
Yeah, and I think it does have a knock-on impact sometimes. I know sometimes I'm talking to candidates and you can hear they sound dejected, they sound a little bit pissed off, you know, and it's like you need to reset your mind before you go into the next interview because you don't want to take that sort of negative energy with you into the next interview process.
So I found myself with an internship at Polydor Records. To a lot of people's great disappointment, I had an awesome time, I've got to say. I think that people are quite often looking for skeletons in the closet and things like that when you talk about these experiences. But I got really lucky. I got to work with some of the most amazing artists. I got to work with Nine Inch Nails. I've got a credit in a Nine Inch Nails album. That is a huge, huge deal to me. And then from there, I went on to Fiction Records. Again, just working with incredible artists. And one of the most inspirational campaigns there was working with Kay Tempest on the record Let Me Chaos. That was transformative for me. I felt it was just such an important piece of music and piece of art. And it was just such a pleasure to be a part of it, especially just through to having someone who was a relatively underground spoken word poet right the way through to being nominated for a Brit Award. It's genuinely a really, really rewarding thing that's come through that. But then I think by that point, I had been working in music for quite a while. I had these ideas of starting up a form of agency / consultancy at some point. And then the opportunity had never really become obvious until I got made redundant. So, and this is quite a common thing that happens in bigger companies, not just record labels, but all corporate companies, where things get moved around. It's as simple as that. And I'd survived a few previous at other points in my career, and this one wasn't so lucky, and used that moment of redundancy to go, well, what can I do now? It's time to start this company. I did my due diligence, did a few interviews in other places, and then felt that there was a gap in the market for something that represented what you would get within a record label. So product management, creative, digital marketing, social, but you weren't necessarily able to hire. So that's what this company is. And that's what I've built up around it. So the four things that we do off the back of the experiences that I've had are product management, digital marketing, like paid spend and optimizations, through to social media, which is just day-to-day posting. And then creative commissioning, right through from digital content, swipe-ups and fun stuff to official grand music videos. Again, just through the contacts that I'd had through being in the industry and working at Universal for the time that I had. Brilliant fortune came through. People wanted to bring artists to us and the company's been able to grow. And last year we were able to open an office in LA as well with a longtime friend of mine called Matt. And we actually met working on the Haim Days Are Gone project at Polydor. So again, it all goes back to those early formative moments and just keeping people close and keeping in touch, but in a genuine way, I think.
Absolutely. It's like what we said at the beginning, you know, networking and those serendipitous moments meeting people are not to be underestimated in terms of being the building blocks for what can become a great career. There's obviously, you know, you've talked about some really proud moments for you. You've talked about some challenges that you've faced. Bring us up to date now with something that you're really excited about at the moment or that you're really grateful for at the moment in terms of the work you're doing.
It's tough because there are quite a few different things. And every, you know, we onboard new things every couple of weeks and it's genuinely like ridiculously exciting quite a lot of the time. One of the things I'm really excited about at the moment is we're working in tandem with the US team now on social media for Rage Against the Machine, which is really big. It was something I think for my 20-somethingth birthday, I went to Finsbury Park to see them with a bunch of my mates when they did the Killing in the Name of Christmas number one celebration party. And I've seen them at festivals and all that sort of stuff before. So that's been so exciting. There are a lot of new artists that we're working with as well. Like there's people like Sam Wills and Math Time Joy, who are incredible, who are developing and releasing new music now. We've been working with Ignition as well, who look after Oasis and Noel Gallagher, on helping them with parts of the Morning Glory campaign for the reissue that came out last week, which is just crazy. Like the conversations that you're having there, you're like, I can't believe we're talking about Oasis. It's just such a privilege. And yeah, God, there are so many. I think we've got probably got like 50 or 60 acts on the roster at the moment. So I don't want to miss anyone's name out. But we genuinely work with people who we like. And that's really important as well.
I can hear Syl barely being able to conceal her excitement when you mention the word Oasis.
Clearly, we all know my obsession as a teenager with Oasis and thinking I was Liam Gallagher. So
it's awesome. I'm well happy. It's just really nice to be a part of that team and be trusted to contribute.
Obviously, you know, in hearing your career story, your experience sprawls out in so many different directions. And I think at some point, like you've done, you kind of have to pick something and stick with it and really work at that thing. Is there anything that you miss, any aspects of the music business that you wish you were able to work in still, or anything you wish you could be doing now that you just don't have the capacity for?
I wish that I had spent more time and tried harder with production in studios. I think that at the time when I was doing it, it was, when people say male dominated, it was probably the most male dominated area that you could have possibly chosen in music. And this is as someone who went into touring production. I think now it would be a much more pleasurable experience to try and break into. And not that it wasn't, like, I had some incredible support and brilliant people that I worked with, but it didn't stop it from feeling intimidating or, you know, being made to feel relatively unwelcome, especially when you get to university and you're in there with loads of lads who don't really want you anywhere near the desk or anywhere near the computer. They don't want you to do the mix. They don't want you to be the one who signs it off. And that can be quite overwhelming. So now with hindsight, I wish I could go back and try that again, either with the 2020 mindset or by being a bit more, not aggressive, but forthright perhaps in taking up the space. That's probably one thing I'd go back to.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you mention the 2020 mindset, because you kind of hope that either things are changing or people are being given the tools they need, you know, to call these situations out and maybe help change to come into place. Is there anything that you would change about the music industry now, if you could, that you've observed?
Oh, Jesus, that's a really big question. What would I change about it now? I think I want to see a continuation of the good work that companies are doing in putting more women into senior positions. I think I'd like to see a better representation of diversity in general across the music industry. It's started, but it's not there. We need to work a lot harder on that stuff. We need to be a lot more honest with each other on how that works and what that means as well. I think that another big change that I would really personally like to see is, in terms of the environmental emergency that we're in at the moment, more work being done by the music industry on that. I think that we forget how influential the artists that we work with are and the types of things and the types of music that we work with are. And we need to sound a really big fat alarm at the moment. Again, I'm really lucky that I do work with artists who do engage in that and do sound the alarm as loudly as they can. But I think as an industry, we need to work a lot harder and we need to make things easier. We need to make our products more accessible. We need to use more recycled materials. We need to be sending a lot less to landfill. There are many things like that which I would change overall.
It's funny that you, the four words you picked up front, I'm going to reveal a few secrets here. So obviously you picked positivity, passion and patience and people. There are some words on the list that none of our guests have picked so far to talk about. One is progress, one is permission, and one is power, and actually one is peace as well. Those progression, permission and power, I think, really fit into a lot of the things you were just talking about and touching on, particularly with the things that need to change within the industry. So I agree wholeheartedly with all of those things that you've said. I'm going to jump in and ask a couple of questions that are specifically focused towards people who are starting out. So there's two questions for you. First is, what do you wish you'd known when you started out? And the second is, what's the best piece of advice you've been given?
I think the one thing I wish I'd known is that everyone is looking at themselves. They're not looking at you. I think I'd have gone about things with a lot less self-consciousness and a bit more self-confidence. The best piece of advice I've ever been given is that there is more than one way to skin a cat than ripping its nose through its arsehole.
That is an excellent piece of advice. Please elaborate on that one.
Well, it's one of my mum's favourite phrases. Essentially what it means is you don't have to go at everything with aggression. You don't have to just launch into everything. Sometimes you can deal with things in a different way. You don't have to always take route one. And I think that overall the phrase is about being creative on your approach and being customized on your approach. Not everybody's going to react the same way to something. Not everyone's going to be receptive to one particular method of communication.
Okay, great. Amazing. So on to our next little segment, actually. So each episode we ask our amazing producer, Kiani, if there's anything he'd like to ask our guests, as he's in the early stages of his career. And obviously, I love to encourage people to ask questions. So I'm all about creating those opportunities, as we've discussed today. So we call this bit Kiani's Question Corner. So I am going to hand over to Kiani now.
Thanks for that, Sylph. It's almost like I feel special now I've got my own Question Corner. But all right, let's go into it. Olivia, I've checked out Black Star London, and I can see that your agency runs many different services for the music business, which I must say I admire. Props to you and your team, by the way. For this question, what was one of the most organisational challenges that you faced?
I would say this entire lockdown, and I hate to be boring and reference it back to lockdown, but organisationally, this is probably one of the hardest things that we've had to deal with as a company. And more in the sense of, we don't want people to be miserable. I want people to be happy when they're working. And that's the biggest problem at the moment, is making sure that everyone is happy and they feel safe and they feel secure.
That's really good. That also like references to my second question, actually, because I was going to say, how do you create motivation for yourself and for your team? Not only just in this lockdown, but, you know, like just generally.
It's just making sure that when we bring stuff into this company, it's stuff that people actually want to work with for a start. There has to be some sort of, it's not an A&R process as such, but is it good is basically the best way to look at it. And I think that that keeps people motivated. I think that you should ask people's opinions readily, and you should accept them as well without ego. The way that we work, I call it the mosh pit rules. If somebody falls down, everybody else has to pick them back up. And we all have to operate on that basis. If someone else is overrunning and they can't get their stuff done that day, everyone needs to jump in and they need to help out. And we will get everybody out the door on time. And it's as simple as that. And it's making sure that there is no nastiness. There is hierarchy. Obviously, there are people in different levels of position, but that everyone is aware that it's everyone's job to wash up. It's everyone's job to take the bin bags down. And if someone else is overrunning from intern to director, you help each other out.
I love that. I love that. I love the whole metaphor as well, the mosh pit idea. That's a really good way to look at it. Thanks for that, by the way. Yeah, back to you, Anne.
Thanks, Kiani. Always with the good questions. So each episode, we make a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. Olivia, which cause have you picked and why?
Well, my cause that I have chosen is a company called Small Green Shoots. What that charity does is they work with people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds with different access to training and non-traditional forms of education. As I've mentioned, I went through a non-traditional education route myself, and I also struggled in school, and it took me a moment to work out that I needed to invest in academia and I needed to do things that I enjoyed. And that's what Small Green Shoots are really good at, is that they work with people who they encourage in those areas. And we have been really lucky to have taken apprentices from Small Green Shoots who've gone on to blossom and be an incredibly invaluable part of our team. And we're really proud of that. We also have been working with them on doing a bit of a rebrand and some other bits and pieces over the last couple of months. And the team there are just some of the most inspirational, smart people you've ever worked with. Natalie Wade, who founded the company, is an absolute inspiration and deserves every accolade that can be thrown at her. She is extremely hands-on with all of the shoots that come in there. If someone has an issue or an emergency, she's on their doorstep. It's the kind of care that people don't get when they're doing standardized training. And I think that that's what makes this particular charity very special. And on top of that, they also support artists. So they've invested and they've helped to get Arts Council grants for people from Michael Kiwanuka, Georgia Smith, Frisco, Berwyn, and it's fantastic. So yeah, I would implore everybody to Google Small Green Shoots, read up on the work that they're doing, and with great pleasure, I donate this fee to Small Green Shoots.
What an amazing cause. Thank you so much, Olivia Hobbs. It's been so great chatting to you today on the podcast.
You guys too.
Do you know what? I just wanted to give a real special thank you to you, Olivia, because everything you talk about is reflected in the work you do and with what you've done with Black Star London. And I just think you don't get enough credit for the opportunities you've given people. I don't know if the team get enough credit. I'm sure they do for you. But the team at Black Star are
absolutely amazing. They are such a beautiful bunch of people, and you feel that kind of warmth and love when you talk to them and when you're around them, which it's been a while since I've been to Pop in Brixton, I will admit, but I just wanted to say like an extra special thank you to you personally for everything you do and will continue to do, no doubt. And we really could have, I had to keep muting myself and keep my mouth shut because there's so many things I wanted to talk to you about, but we only have a limited amount of time. So Olivia, massive, massive thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thanks for inviting me as well. Yeah, I really appreciate that. I am really proud of the team here. I think everybody is proper sound, and that's quite nice. So proper we have sound. Fun. Proper great sound. Team. It's really good. We have thanks. To spend all of our time with each other, so we might as well enjoy it, right?
Exactly. Well, look, thank you so much. Like I say, real pleasure. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again.
Thank you so much to our guest today, Olivia. So great to hear her story and amazing to hear how that tenacity has lasted her all the way through childhood to the amazing career she has now. Tenacity is important, especially at a time like this. And I hope you're all keeping safe and managing to stay positive during lockdown. If you've got any questions or concerns, or if there's anything you want to talk to me and Sylve about, please do send us an email, hello@biypeople.co.uk. with BIY Pod in the subject line. If you're at any level in your career, whether you're just starting out or if you're already established but not quite doing what it is you want to be doing, get in touch with us and hopefully we can help you via the podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram, biy.people.and.talent, and you can find us on Facebook. If you are already established in your career, the Facebook page is BIY Peoples, and if you're just starting out, it's BIY Future Talent on Facebook. Thank you so much to our brilliant, brilliant team, Kiarni Kerr, our producer, and Danny Roberts, our editor.
This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.